Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the forest fires today that I haven't covered probably in a year or two. The fires in the West, we're going to discuss controlling anxiety from the Might of Thoughts book. We're going to talk a little bit about overpopulation. We're going to discuss the idea of fulfilling your duty to yourself. And then finally, we're going to talk about the creational natural laws and a new one that I found on page 250 of the Might of Thoughts book. Billy Meyer is an 80-year-old man who lives in Switzerland. He lives in a tiny mountain village in northern Switzerland known as Hinterschmidruti. It's about 45 minutes east of Zurich. He lives in a beautiful pine forest with snow-capped mountains around. Billy, at a very young age, started getting telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial human named Spoth, who lived on a planet called Era, which was some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. The Plearan people are descended from the people from Lyra Vega. They have been on the Earth in the past. They recognize the spirit form in this young Edward Albert Meyer, and they had been watching it reincarnate on the Earth for the past 13,000 years. And he has been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught the information that we talk about on this show, and most of it was lost over the years or distorted and falsified. So Soth met with Billy the first time in 1945 and became Billy's mentor for the next 11 years. And he taught Billy many things, particularly would tell Billy about his future life and what he would face. And Billy was told he would lose his left arm, that his wife would turn against him. There would be some 20 attempts on his life. All of this was the negative aspect of the negative-positive balance that we all try to maintain in our lives. The negative and the positive are two powers which go together, and they should never be separated. So when we try to separate the negative, we get out of balance, which is called Assartung in the German, where we start to lose the control of the good human nature. Actually, we have a neutral positive innermost creational nature, which comes from something called the spirit form. And deep within your superior colliculus, which is an area of your middle brain which controls sight, is something called the Geist form in the German. And it radiates this neutral positive kind of thinking. And it impulses your material consciousness. We all have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is what survives between lifetimes. And Spoth, Billy's first mentor, knew that Billy's spiritual consciousness was on a very, very important mission here on the earth, which would involved teaching these spiritual principles, these creational natural laws like love, like striving, like keeping a harmonious balance, laws like the law of intactness, laws like the law of reincarnation. And these laws are very important that we learn these laws, because this is how we cope with adversity in our life, and it's also how we enjoy one of the other laws, which is the law of abundance and prosperity. Now, we here on the earth are very out of balance. We are kind of an insane society, and we're rushing headlong to our own destruction. And there are 9 billion people on the planet at this point, and this is causing the destruction of our natural world, and it's a very complicated process. One of the things that we do with our bulldozers, as we're building places for people to live, we are wiping out the forests, which are what keeps, what helps to maintain the balance here on the earth. As the forests, as we lose our forests, weather becomes more extreme, because the forests moderate the weather. The forest keeps the shade in the summertime, which cools the air down, and it also has a low albedo, so it doesn't reflect back the light and the heat so much in the winter. So the forests are critical for life on the planet. That's why the Pleiadians suggest, and they say it's a creational natural law, that planets like ours, which is very typical, I think, in terms of planets for human beings, should only have about 500 million people on it. Now, there is, as the weather runs out of control, it also seems to have other effects that I'm still trying to understand and I'm working on right now. And I think it's related to these forest fires, which are very difficult for me to study. I've had to take a break from it for a while. But anyway, I'm going to play some clips now that talk about the fires that are raging in the West. And one of them that has been burning this year is called the Rice Ridge Fire. I think it's still burning. It's in the Lolo National Forest in Montana. It has burned about 160,000 acres and started in September of this year, early September. The other big one is the Checo Bar Fire, which is burning in Oregon. It's burned about 191,000 acres, and it started September 10th. And a couple other fires that you might hear discussed on these clips. One is the Lolo Peak Fire in Montana and the North Peak Fire in Washington State. So here we go, and we'll bear with me while I make a few adjustments and set us up to listen to these.
Good evening, I'm Jill Valley.
And I'm Dennis Bragg. 1,000 homes now in the Seedley Lake area are evacuated. That evacuation order coming Monday night because of the Rice Ridge Fire.
Emergency officials say residents should be on alert and ready to go. Take a look at this map. There are about 1,090 homes and buildings threatened by this fire. The mandatory evacuation orders are for 1,000 homes. Those mandatory evacuations are for the following areas: the junction of Highway 83 and Cedar Lane northeast to Morrell Creek Road. The boundary continues along Cottonwood Lakes Road east to the forest boundary, Cottonwood Lakes Road at the forest boundary, and south to the northern boundary of the Double Arrow.
Also, the junction of Highway 83 and Whitetail Drive east to the junction of Whitetail Drive and Dolly Varden, and the southern boundary continues east to include the area north of the Commons and eastward to the intersection of Montana Drive and South Canyon Drive. It continues southeast from there along Montana Drive to the junction with Glacier Drive, and then south to the junction with Double Arrow Road, including Pyramid Loop and areas in the Double Arrow subdivision to the south and east. Also, the junction of Highway 83 and Cedar Lane, south of the junction of 83 and Whitetail Drive.
Areas under evacuation warning include the area from South Boy Scout Road, north to Tamarack's Resort, west of Highway 83 and east of the lake. Also under warnings include all properties from the intersection of Woodworth Road and Highway 83, east to Skilly Drive, and all properties north of Woodworth Road.
And we're continuing to closely monitor this rapidly changing wildfire situation to get the most critical information you need.
Well, for the very latest on what's happening, let's send it to MTN's Eric Clements, who's live in Seeley Lake now. Eric.
At edges, we don't have an exact location. Probably the next time we get a good fix on that is the infrared flight, which can see through the smoke and give us a good location. So there's a good chance it has moved east from this map location, but we don't have a good fix on where that is right now.
All right, just one quick overview of this map. All right, so it looks like the feed kind of cut out just about a minute ago, so we're just going to jump right back in this. So here's a map since of 10:45 p.m. last night of the Rice Ridge Fire, which has grown for over more than 48,000 acres in the last 24 hours. So I'm just going to give you a wide shot of this map here and kind of jump right into this again. So what can we expect, I guess? What are we expecting in the next 12 hours? I mean, these things change so constantly. What can we expect today?
Well, two things that are happening weather-wise. There was a red flag warning issued for today. That has been rescinded. The meteorologists have looked at the conditions and backed off from that red flag warning, which is good.
Even with the rains, there's still weeks of work left on the big fires. Crews have gone from cutting miles of containment lines across the forest to trying to make it look like they were never there. MTN's Augusta McDonald visited one of the lines at the Lolo Peak Fire and brings us the latest.
150 miles of containment lines were established this summer to hem in the Lolo Peak Fire. Where plants and soil were scraped away or torn out, the land is left vulnerable. This is at the ski runs on Lolo Peak, where heavy machinery crews are working to repair lines cut in mid-August by replacing the soil that was scraped away.
The excavator is moving material back into the constructed fire line so that we can avoid erosion problems. We'll construct erosion features such as water bars here, and then we'll actually seed this ground so that it looks like in a year nothing ever happened.
Erosion is a big concern after a wildfire. Crews here are building water bars to direct runoff into the vegetation. Other containment lines are not such an easy fix, where large machinery ripped out trees to create a fuel break like this one at Rice Ridge. Crews have a lot more material to replace.
So if this line had been constructed in open forest and we had had to fell trees in order to build it, then we would actually be pulling that material back in on top of this line as well before.
Yesterday, the fire came over the crest and in the space of about 2 hours developed about a half mile long wall of flame, 200-foot flame lengths that moved halfway down the mountain towards us, so that kind of changed our plans. We had enough proactive evacuation notices in place so that we were able to quickly evacuate the ski area, and then we chose to withdraw our own folks and were able to come up here and re-engage at 3 o'clock in the morning. And our job is still pretty much the same. Structure protection, we have a plan in place, and we're trying to prepare the best we can for if there's further fire activity around here. Up the hill there where you can't see, there's still a lot of residual fire from the large advance last night. But today, so far, the fire behavior has been less extreme. As the afternoon gets warmer and the winds build, we do expect possibly some more extreme behavior like we had yesterday afternoon.
The ski area is on the west side of the valley. The fire came over the east side, and it was like a sheer wall of flame that came over. It was pretty impressive. It immediately triggered the level 3 evacuation, and that got everybody moving in different directions at the same time.
And all of a sudden, we looked up on the hill, and everybody was coming out of the bar, and the flames were on the hill coming down.
There was two spots that turned into an inferno in like 15 minutes. And then when we were going down the road, there was an avalanche of exploding debris.
Yeah,
all within 25 minutes.
Yeah, we were in a rush to get out of there. It was panic. You could feel it. The fire, and it was just raging down the hill.
But at that point, there was only maybe 30 people on the mountain.
Then a mass exodus of cars driving around in the smoke.
Yeah, and we told our guests just to pack up and head out.
Yeah, people were like, should we check out? And we're just like, get out of here? So pretty crazy.
That was it.
It was supposed to be a small, informal meeting to address concerns about the fire, but instead it turned into a large gathering of neighbors wondering, one, how they can help and if they're in the path of danger.
The entire Northwest is on fire.
Tonight, Greenwater neighbors are eager to know what happens next.
We have thrown every resource that we can possibly throw at this.
That's Melanie Banton, a spokesperson for the incident management team that came up from Florida to battle the Norse wildfire, which is now more than 40,000 acres large.
Basically, they're working ahead of this fire. It's backing down the ridge slowly, but what they're doing is they're out there with the cabins, and they've got a hand crew in there.
Many people here own some of the cabins in the Mount Baker Snoqualmie Forest. They want to know how the fire can be put out quickly.
This idea of not using retardant.
The forest has a no retardant policy, so it's water or nothing.
What's also concerning here is the shortage of resources.
We're significantly stressed everywhere. And then on top of that, we have the hurricanes and everything else coming in. On the other side of the country, it's just a bad situation all around.
The community wants to help.
We can get word to the governor's office. We can get word to your bosses at DNR. We can enlist neighboring communities. We can get whoever we need here if it's going to help.
But there's red tape and policies around folks helping out who aren't trained.
Our entire team is from Florida. We know what it means to have your homes. I'm sorry. We understand that you're worried. We're all worried about homes, and we get that. I think we can have that empathy for you. If you understand what we're facing, we understand what you're facing.
But those here do want to communicate that they're trying as hard as they can to put this fire out.
Crews here say hopefully there will be some moisture tomorrow and the rest of the week, but the crew that's here is, again, from Florida, so they actually have to go back to respond to the hurricane and swap out crews, so more people will be coming in this week.
We're about 60 miles up Highway 410, and you can see how much the visibility is impacted by the North Peak Fire. Smoke has completely filled the canyons here. It is socked in. It's hard to see, hard to breathe, and the fire is affecting people in many ways. Residents in Greenwater are stockpiling for a long firefight.
I got him water and sandwiches and chips.
Dropping off supplies for the volunteer firefighters manning the lines around Crystal Mountain Ski Resort.
I've been here since 98. I've never seen a fire on this side of the ridge of this magnitude.
The only road up to the resort is still closed today.
This happened so fast.
Tiana Anderson was one of 30 Crystal Mountain employees evacuated off the mountain when the North Peak Fire crested and came down the slopes last night.
I've never seen anything like this or even come this close to threatening our livelihood up there.
They went from a level 1 to a level 3 evacuation within seconds, clearing employees out of housing and guests out of the hotel.
I'd really never seen anything like it.
The largest wildfire in Oregon continues to burn, but some local firefighters got to come home after fighting the Chetco Bar fire. This is Coin 6 News at 11 o'clock. I'm Jennifer Hoff. Jeff is off tonight. That fire is burning in southern Oregon near the coast. The smoke, though, can be seen for miles. But as large as this fire is, so too is the spirit of those fighting it. Our Andrew Dimbert got to speak with some of them. He joins us now with their stories. Andrew?
Yeah, Jennifer, they're out down there pulling 16-hour shifts, sleeping in tents and sleeping bags, far from home, putting their lives on the line to save people and their homes from those destructive flames.
I'd really never seen anything like it.
The Chetco Bar fire in southern Oregon is bigger than Portland, Hillsboro, and Beaverton combined, demanding a response just as big.
The sky was black. I mean, it was kind of a goldish color with black all the way around.
Today, local area firefighters from TVFNR returned home after helping battle the largest fire in the state.
It was burning very hot the first few days. Then the marine layer kind of laid in, and it allowed the fire departments involved to really kind of catch up.
Okay, it looks like my last clip died.
Same way yesterday. It was just as bad. I'm just going to get in my truck and drive downtown, but what's the point? It's just like being out in a heavy fog, but it's not fog. And for all of you liberal pieces of shit who keep coming on my YouTube channel and leaving comments like, oh, this is natural. This is the way it's supposed to be. Forests have been burning for thousands of years. In ancient times, well, this isn't ancient times, okay? This is now. People inhabit this earth. Don't even bother leaving your stupid-ass comments. You must be out of your goddamn minds. You have to be totally ignorant.
Well, I forgot about that particular comment. There's some truth to what the man's saying there. People are still asleep despite the fact that the weather on the planet is completely gone insane. It's a very complicated set of cause and effect that I don't have all the answers for how all this works. But going back to 2011, I guess I started keeping some track of these incredible disasters. Let me run through this quickly just to give you a perspective. Fukushima in 2011, still radiating the Pacific Ocean. 20,000 people were killed during that. The Moore tornado, 2013, winds of 210 miles an hour. 2013 of August, the Pony Complex fire in Idaho, 149,000 acres burned. The Rim fire, which was the one I always remember, in Northern California, which burned 402 square miles, third largest fire in California history. It threatened the water supply of San Francisco. Then on November, Typhoon Haiyan killed 1,774 people. Then in January of 2014, we had a massive traffic jam in Atlanta and about 10 other southern states. People were stuck on their cars for 14 hours with no food and water. They were stranded in schools, drugstores, grocery stores. We forget these things. The Funny River fire, May of 2014, 193,000 acres burned. That's 302 square miles. The Carlton Complex fire in North Central Washington in July 14th, 2014, burned 390 square miles. That's incredible. That's an area four times the size of Seattle, over 256,000 acres. The Fort McMurray wildfire, 1.5 million acres burned in Canada. That was July 5th of 2016. The Cold Springs fire, which was much smaller, but another radio show host had to evacuate their home, so I put that in there. Recently, in August, we had the Hurricane Harvey, which dropped 50 inches of rain on Houston and flooded Houston out completely. About $40 billion of damage done there. Hurricane Irma, which slammed into Florida, 7 million people in Florida without power. 650,000 were evacuated. Then we had Hurricane Maria, which also took place in September, near the end of September. We're still reeling from that. 3.4 million people in Puerto Rico with no power, and that's still the case. That's probably the biggest disaster we've ever had. And then we had another hurricane, Hurricane Nate, which I didn't even cover. The fires that we just talked about were the Rice Ridge fire in Montana, which is 160,000 acres, the Chetco Bar fire, which is about 191,000 acres burned. That's in Oregon. And then the Lolo Peak fire and the North Peak fire were, I think, related to those two bigger fires. They were both only 50,000 acres, so the way these things go nowadays, those are smaller fires. And I probably skipped a few of the fires and the tragedies that are occurring. And the Meyer prophecies say that the United States will be an area of devastation. And he said it will be wrecked. Billy said it would be wrecked. And here I stay. For whatever reason, I don't know. That the hurricanes and the fires would do tremendous damage and would continue to do tremendous damage. Again, this is some of my research, that forests moderate the weather. Deforestation from fires and from bulldozers and has caused dramatic instability in our weather. So we're going to continue to face these very difficult circumstances. Let me read just a section here. This is one of Billy's prophetic writings. It says, during the next few years, man of earth, the reins of the horse will slip away from you. Now death will be extremely familiar with you. You will neither find rest nor peace. And it goes on and on, and it talks about dams are breaking, storm winds howl, the white death hits hard, typhoons and hurricanes are tearing your works they throw down on earth. So this is what we're facing. So how do we deal with this? Well, this kind of stuff can produce a tremendous amount of anxiety. And one of the ways we fight anxiety is with the information that we've learned in the Might of Thoughts book, which teaches us to be neutral, positive in our thinking. So we're neither positive, we're a little positive, we're a neutral positive in our thinking. But it's more positive than what I really initially realized when I started studying this material. So the goal is to control our anxiety. What is anxiety? Anxiety is the negative feeling we get because of unknowns, particularly negative unknowns. And these are important things to tell yourself. And this comes from pages 200 to 230, as well as near the end of the book, around page 360. I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful. I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony, I persist, I persevere, I endure. I am calm. And I found that by saying these things, you're pulling things out of your memory to restore healthy thinking. You see, overcoming anxiety happens via the intellect. So let me read what the book says. This is the most important point to do with gaining control of one's anxiety, for which reason it must be imprinted into one's memory so that after time it gets into one's thoughts when it is required. One must then work in this kind to overcome the anxiety and to control the anxiety via the intellect. Let me continue here. It says, but this change also takes place in the entire body, because as a result of the disappearance of the anxiety, there is a calming of the nerves. You know, one of the things I also talk about is that constructive thoughts produce a calm. There is a calming of the nerves, which were stirred up, and as a result, the body can become strained and tense because of anxiety. And anxieties can trigger conflicts, immense conflicts. So what we're searching for, what we're trying to do, is searching for the innermost peace, which exists deep in the innermost creational nature of the human being. So this peace we want to integrate with the inner nature. Remember, we have an innermost creational nature, which is related to your spirit form, and we have an inner nature, which is your, you might call your ego during this lifetime, which is a challenge because the ego is continually wanting to pull us out of neutral positive balance, whereas the spirit form continually wants us to stay in a neutral positive point of view. I want to quickly, and I'll talk about overpopulation a little bit, because I thought it kind of went along with what we were talking about before. Overpopulation is a big problem. Here is David Suzuki speaking about overpopulation.
You know, there are a lot of things that we can fix in this world. We can do something about it. We can design the cities that we live in, the kinds of houses we live in, the market, the economy, currency, how many trees we're going to cut, how many fish we're going to catch. Those things human beings can manage and control because we create them and do them. But some things are facts of life. We have to live with the speed of light, gravity, entropy, the first and second laws of thermodynamics. Those are things that we have to accept and work ourselves around. And there is another one that is absolutely crucial. It's a mathematical reality called exponential growth. If something is growing at 1% a year, it'll double in 70 years. 2% a year, it'll double in 35 years. 3% a year in 24 years. 4%, 17 and a half years. Anything growing exponentially will double in a predictable length of time. Now I'm going to show you why all of this stuff about we got to keep growing, keep the economy growing, we've got to keep everything growing, is ultimately suicidal. I'm going to give you a system analogous to the planet, and that's a test tube full of food for bacteria. So the test tube and food is the planet, and the bacteria are us. Now I'm going to introduce one bacterial cell in, and it's going to divide every minute. That's exponential growth. So at time zero, at the beginning, there's one cell. 1 minute, there are two. 2 minutes, there are four. 3 minutes, there are eight. 4 minutes, 16. That's exponential growth. And at 60 minutes, the test tube is completely packed with bacteria and there's no food left. So we have a 60-minute growth cycle. When is the test tube only half full? Well, of course, the answer is at 59 minutes. Even though it's been chugging along for 59 minutes, it's only half full, but 1 minute later, it'll be completely filled. So that means at 58 minutes...
So we have a gigantic overpopulation problem. It grows exponentially, and our population has doubled and doubled and doubled so many times, it's really hard to even understand and appreciate. Here are some population statistics. A lot of this comes from Frosty Wooldridge's book called America on the Brink. Roughly 4 million people are born on the street and die on the street every year in India. 18 million people starve to death every year in the world. I think it's higher than that now. It talks about 9,000 newborns per hour. I think I've read some statistics which say we're up to 10,000 newborns per hour. Bangladesh, a country the size of Iowa, has 167 million people living in it. 10 million children die every year from starvation. So these problems are one on top of another. You have starvation on the one hand, and still the population grows. The world population grows by 77 million people annually. So, and this leads to water shortages, and in many places of the world, we have water shortages. One of those places that has water shortages is Bangladesh.
Next, today is World Water Day. Tonight, we look at an innovative approach to getting clean water to slum dwellers in so-called megacities. Our story is another in our occasional reports about population issues around the globe. It's part of a collaboration with National Geographic Magazine and the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, and comes from special correspondent Steve Sapienza in Bangladesh.
Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is one of the world's fastest-growing cities and one of the poorest. As in many other developing countries, people are leaving the countryside in search of work and a better life in the city. Dhaka's population, now estimated at 15 million, is expected to hit 20 million by 2025.
Dhaka is one of the mega cities which is growing too fast.
Country director for the charity WaterAid, Dr. Khairul Islam, says the increased population density is severely taxing the city's ability to house and care for its people.
Almost 5,000 slums are in and around Dhaka city, and almost 1/3 of the population are living in either low-income communities and slum areas. Most of them don't have ownership over those pieces of land that they're residing. But the main challenge is provisioning essential services for this huge number of population, mainly water and sanitation.
With 2,000 newcomers daily, the struggle to find clean water in the slums often has life-threatening consequences.
Water? Yes, we have water, but the water is not always available. When water is available, it is often bad. Yesterday, a woman here thought she had cholera. She went to the hospital, but she died last night.
Very sad what's going on around the world. And we need to focus on what we've learned here about the spiritual teachings and to be able to deal with the coming difficulties, because I think things are going to get worse before they get better. One thing that we need to learn to do is to fulfill our duty to ourselves. And that means to be honest, be benevolent, don't turn your back on yourself. No self-chastisement, no inferiority complexes, no self-abuse. We need to be gentle to yourself. We can't devote ourselves to our passions. If we use our intellect, we will have enjoyment in the fulfillment of our responsibility. Page 28 in Billy's book, The Way to Live, says, "It's never excusable for a human being to neglect his or her own duties and duties to self, no matter in which kind or wise that happens. And the dealing with other human beings is not acceptable when he or she only drifts around in order to shine and thereby neglects his or her companionship, even only one iota. Truly, whoever hangs around beyond his or her own house becomes a stranger in his or her own home and in his or her own family. And this is what happens when people live in distraction, in the discos, in the bars, in the hotels, in the amusement parlors. A human being, and this is one thing Billy warns about, is inner boredom. And I have some ideas about inner boredom. And this inner boredom, I think, occurs probably for multiple different reasons. But one thing I would say is that if you're not striving, remember, only true satisfaction comes from striving. That's one of the creational natural laws. It's one of the laws of the universe. If you're not striving, you will not be happy. Striving means you're working, you're continuing to be focused, and you're moving forward. The law of striving, the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. Without striving, there is no happiness. So if you're having this deadly inner boredom, you've kind of lost your sense of purpose. And you need to do some self-examination and get to work to beat it. Because if you continue down the path of inner boredom, if you get involved with the crowd of idle people, you'll lose your self-esteem eventually. And you'll fall prey to embarrassment. These are very interesting ideas Billy presents here. You will be confronted with your own self if that happens. Let me continue with read this to you. Unfortunately, there are too many human beings who seek out places, events, societies, and circles where on the one hand they can boastfully distinguish themselves, on the other hand they are flattered thereby. More than ever, the human being loses the very last taste for the voice of truth, not to mention the last remnant of self-esteem and the last possibility of recognizing one's duty to yourself. So one of your duties, I guess, is striving, to continue to strive. The law of love, remember, the highest form of love is called effective love. It's based on respect and reverence. It's the creational natural law. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So creation radiates love, even though it's a Wesenheiten, it's very impersonal. It still radiates love. It's just its nature. It's like the sun shining is the best way I can understand it. So we need to appreciate the love, the law of love. And our motto is live and help live. You should be able to sense the radiating love of creation. Keep focus on that if you can do it. The next law is a law of striving. You have to continue throughout your whole life to strive to evolve your intellect, to evolve your spirit, to evolve your talents, to keep up with all your duties that are involved around your home. The creation itself, as well as all its creatures in Wesenheiten, is imbued with the power of striving. In order to attain success, the future progress, and that which is higher, striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an inconvertible creational law. In order to reach through incessant evolution that which is higher and absolutely fulfilled. So that's another creational natural law. I say if you're depressed, if you're unhappy, get to work. The other law is the law of harmony, which means that there's a negative and a positive. There's this bipolar structure in everything that exists. And you and your thinking should be neutral positive. That means you're optimistic, you're confident, you're relaxed, you're cheerful, you're enthusiastic, you're thankful, you're in harmony. You're not negative. When we're negative, we're rotating negative thoughts in our psyche, which causes distress in the psyche. Remember, it's the automatic thoughts which are the critical point. Because if you're having automatic thoughts, most of the time that's from negative thinking. And you're building synapses in your brain. It's like weeds growing in your garden, completely out of control. The fourth law of creation that I'm talking about is the law of prosperity and abundance. Every life form, and also every human being, has everything in plentiful abundance. Now, as we overpopulate the planet, it will threaten the law of prosperity and abundance. It will threaten the law of harmony. It's much, much harder to have harmony internally. It will threaten the law of love because people won't have the proper space to live in and the proper environment. They won't get the refreshment from nature. And it will probably affect the fundamental law of evolution. It's going to be harder to evolve in this place that we're creating, this overpopulation that's facing. I wanted to talk, if I can find it, about the law of intactness, which is something kind of new that I've just learned about. I'll have to put that into my notes, which I was working very hard today, and it got to threaten actually the show. I was trying to update my notes and keep my notes online in a little better order. And I do appreciate the incredible avalanche of people coming to the archives. It's very, very encouraging. But let me jump into page 250 of the Might of Thoughts. And I ran over, anytime I find a creational natural law, I try to make note of it. Basically, at birth, the human being has no errors, bad characteristics, bad habits, and so forth. Because truly, he or she first acquires all these things in the course of life. Basically, the creational natural laws determine that every single life form, whereby the human being is first and foremost addressed, has an absolute right to the absolute intactness of his or her consciousness, psyche, and body, and so forth, when he enters into the material life through birth. It is only through the fall of the human being that this law of intactness is given no heed in any regard. So there is a law of intactness that we should be following. Now this, of course, sometimes gets interrupted and there is damage. And the offspring can again be born with all kinds of consciousness-based and physical damages and handicaps. And there can even be artificial abortion because of that. Again, all of these creational laws work together. So even the law of intactness can be interrupted when, you know, we damage our genetics through, you know, maybe intake of poisons in our diet and whatnot. So there are various creational natural laws that exist, and the goal here is to learn these laws and to be able to live a productive and abundant life. So what is the creation? I've been using the term creation and creational natural laws. Creation is our universal consciousness. It's also the physical aspect of our universe. Our universe has seven layers, counter-rotating layers. The fourth layer is what's called the material belt. And the material belt contains all the stars and the galaxies. There is a kind of positive and negative energy that comes into the material belt through the adjacent belts. There is a belt, an outer belt beyond the creational belt, which I believe sends negative energies into the material belt. There's also positive energies which come from the third belt. And when these negative and positive energies hit each other, that's where material, actual physical material, starts to be built. Now, there's a German term, Schöpfungsgeist energy, which is often defined as the creation spirit energy. It interweaves throughout the entire universe. The entire universe is laced with this energy. And it's an intelligence, a very unusual intelligence. It's an intelligence which has the ability to bring forth life forms. Every spirit energy, there's spirit energy that exists in our bodies. It enlivens even the rocks and the stones. We all have spirit energy. Again, the spirit form is the Geist form in the German. It never dies. It lives in the middle of our superior colliculus, in the middle part of our brain. It's a tall stock, it's called. It's a part piece of the universal consciousness. It animates the physical body. It causes the heart to beat. The spirit comes into the body of the fetus at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. It's no bigger than a needlepoint. Its energy spreads throughout the body like a web, like a lattice structure throughout the entire body. It's even after you die, the spirit energy stays in the body for about 3 hours. Billy's third contact was a woman named Semyase. She was about 344 years old, and she first started to land her ship in Hinterschmidruti, Switzerland, during the day, out in the open. And Billy would sit and talk to her back in 1975. And she would tell Billy, for example, she told Billy about the human spirit. And our spirit does not die. It doesn't sleep. It records all of our thoughts. It will tell us if our thinking is right or wrong, if we've learned to pay attention to it. It's the bearer of the creative realm. Every human has their own spirit. It's in the center of your middle brain in the area called the superior colliculus. If a person is non-creational in their thinking, then they're completely focused on the material intellect. Remember, we talked about the material consciousness. And this will cause a very slow development in your spirit and in your consciousness. If you're focused totally on material senses and you reject the deepest intuition of your spirit, your spirit form is impulsing you. It's giving you impulses if you've learned to pay attention to it. In fact, we have a yearning for this joy, this imperishable life, and the permanent peace. The heavens and the earth will perish, but your spirit is going to remain. So Billy, one of the trips he had was in the Great Spacer in Contact 31. He talked about the deep tranquility which he felt when the mothership would jump from one location to another very, very quickly. And he said, this deep tranquility and this unbelievable peacefulness flowing through me is eternity itself. He said, the absolute timelessness, which obviously is no longer subject to outside influence, such as restlessness, strife, and the worries that trouble the consciousness. So we're searching for this peace in our innermost creational natures. It's in there. And we have to maintain a neutral, positive perspective in order to find this inner peace. And that's what we're looking for, is this inner peace. And we can find it. Let me again read from the Might of Thoughts. One must thereby search for the innermost peace, which exists deep in the innermost creational nature of the human being. And this peace must be integrated into the inner nature, which every human being must acquire in himself or herself, which must be fundamentally formed in accordance with the innermost creational nature. From this inner peace, many further values will then arise, such as inner power by means of the consciousness is formed, through which the Might of Thoughts then also rises. And the might of our thoughts is incredible. I remember the passage in the Goblet of Truth, which says that rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. So as we live these many, many lifetimes, we gain power in our spirit form and in our material consciousness. So in the psyche, the book The Psyche tells us about the power in our thoughts. It says the power that the thinking uses as an impetus does not stem from the human being himself or herself. So the power of your thoughts doesn't stem from you. It streams from the spirit and from there into the consciousness. So I look at the spirit as kind of a gateway, and this power is streaming like a beam of light through the spirit and into the consciousness, coming out of the unmeasurable expanses of space and of the universe. It stems from the tremendous wealth of the spirit of the Ur-life of the creation, which is responsible for life in the entire universe. So the incredible power of your thoughts, they stream. The power for it comes from the universe, streams through the spirit and into your consciousness. So, and this is an interesting, another passage from the Goblet of Truth. It says, therefore, you humankind of earth, you must strive and evolve as individuals in yourselves from out of your own consciousness, as well as out of the thoughts and the feelings, in order to come to the truth and to the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation. So we're working to be able to empfinden the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation. So there can be true love and harmony as well as freedom and peace in you. So if you can continue to perceive this love of creation, you'll maintain these high values in yourself and you'll profit from them. And that's the goal of what we're trying to do here in studying the spiritual teachings. And I've got about a minute or two left, and I thought I would finish just with reading a little bit about striving. If striving is absent in some life form, then the power of the progress extinguishes, and thereby the sense of life. If a human being loses his or her striving, he also loses his sense of life. So don't stop striving. Don't lose your sense of life. Continue to evolve. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll talk to you tomorrow if all goes well. Thank you very much.